Welcome to the Nail Your Nutrition podcast, a podcast focused on training for endurance activity. I'm Sarah, a registered dietitian and toddler mom in the Washington, D.C. area. I write the blog Bucket List Tummy and focus most of my work on running and endurance athletes, as well as merging the principles of sports nutrition with the principles of intuitive eating.
And I'm Marita, a sports dietitian and fellow toddler mom in Pensacola, Florida. I work with endurance athletes at my private practice, Eat to Compete. My goal is to help athletes learn to fuel their training with intuitive eating. We are two sports dietitians and moms here to break down the nutrition science to make training more fun and approachable for you. Whether you're a novice athlete, a weekend warrior, a mom trying to fit in a consistent exercise schedule, or a top finisher at big races, we want to help you understand the importance of fueling well. We're so glad to have you here and would appreciate you spreading the word or sharing this episode or podcast with a friend, family member, training partner, coworker, or anyone you would think would enjoy it. If you have a minute, please leave us a review wherever you subscribe to your podcast, as that really helps the show. Now let's get to today's episode.
This episode is brought to you by our Nail Your Nutrition self-paced fueling course. Whether you're a new or seasoned athlete, the Nail Your Nutrition course offers all of the information needed to prepare you, fuel you, and help you recover from endurance activity. The Nail Your Nutrition course has modules on macronutrient distribution, hydration and electrolytes, endurance needs for female athletes, vegans and vegetarians, nutrients of concern, supplements, tips for triathletes and endurance, ultra-endurance runners, tips for relative energy deficiency, and more. We also include case studies to tie everything together, as well as videos and downloadable handouts. Plus, you have lifetime access to the course. That's right, you have access forever with updated scientific sports nutrition guidelines, practical tips for how to implement them, and you also have access to a private community where you can collaborate with other course members. To join the course and get started today, head to nailyournutrition.podia.com. That's nailyournutrition.podia.com, or head to the link in the show notes. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Hey friends, today Sarah and I are chatting with Maddie Elm, fellow sports dietitian and U.S. track and field trials qualifier. Maddie qualified for the Olympic trials in the 5K at the Sound Running Meet in L.A. mid-May 2021 with a time of 15:19. She ranked 29th going into the trials and finished 12th in the heat of Eugene with a 15:58 time. Wow, can you even imagine running that fast? Maddie is an absolute powerhouse. She tells us all about qualifying and competing at the trials, what the lead up to the race was like, her race day nutrition, and more. Maddie lives in Boulder, Colorado, where she trains with Team Boss. She gives us a scoop on being part of Team Boss and how that team dynamic pushes her to be a better athlete. Maddie also talks about her sports nutrition consulting business, Fueling Forward, and how she works with athletes of all levels on improving their relationship with food. We were so stoked to sit down with Maddie. She is an incredible athlete, an incredible dietitian, and we think you're going to learn a lot from her, including all the inside scoop on the Olympic trials. Is there someone that you want us to interview for the podcast? Someone in your life that inspires you, either at the elite level or maybe even everyday level? We'd love to hear. Let us know. You can email us at nailyournutritioncourse1@gmail.com or, you know, connect with us on social media. We are eat2compete.rdn. That's me, Marita. Or Sarah is bucketlisttummyrd. We'd love to hear who you want to chat with, who you want to know about, and delve into episodes that matter to you. Maybe there's someone in your community who is doing awesome things in the running world, or someone you have been running and training with who you think is inspiring to others. Or maybe there's topics that are really pertinent, like maybe you're starting to train for a fall marathon and you have no idea where to start after taking all of 2020 off. Let us know. Shoot us an email. We want to make content that is pertinent to you and matters to your life. So we can only do that if you let us know what you want to hear. We love you guys, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the podcast. Maddie, we're so excited to chat with you and pick your brain on everything from the Olympic trials to being a fellow sports dietitian. So before I get too far in, tell us who you are, where you're from, and what you do.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm excited to be here. My name is Maddie. I'm from just outside of Boulder, Colorado. I am a registered dietitian. I have my own business in sports nutrition consulting. And then I'm also a professional runner I run with Team Boss out of Boulder, Colorado.
Awesome. And how did you get into running in the first place?
Yeah, so I actually started with soccer. I think that's a pretty common transition for a lot of runners. They started with soccer. And, you know, I was good at outrunning everybody. But once everybody else got good at running, I realized I wasn't that good at soccer. So I just transitioned over to running my junior year of high school. I did both my junior year and then switched exclusively to running my senior year and just kept going.
Awesome. Okay, so tell us about your latest runs and then we'll dive into what your training looks like.
Yeah, so most recently I competed in the 5K at the Olympic Trials in Eugene, Oregon. And it was interesting. I've never done a race like this before where you have a prelim and a final for the 5K. So you have to run it 2 times in the span of 3 days. And typically 5Ks are pretty tiring on the track. You're usually pretty sore and exhausted after one. So having to bounce back and do a second one within the span of a few days was new for me. But it actually went really, really well. I made the final and placed 12th, and I went into the trials seated 29th. So I was pretty excited to place a lot higher than I was expected to place. And I just had a lot of fun getting to race and compete. And competing in Hayward's new stadium was just incredible. And there was a crowd, and it was really the first race since COVID where there was a crowd and energy on the track. And, you know, it just felt like a normal race atmosphere. So it was just so much fun and such an awesome experience and something I'd been dreaming of for a long time. So it was awesome to finally get to be there this season.
So how did you qualify for that? Did you run a 5K and then you submitted your time? Like, can you walk us through how that works exactly?
Yeah. So there's something called the Olympic Trials standard. There's also the Olympic standard. So that's a specific time that you have to run in order to be able to compete at the trials. So the standard this year for women was 15:20. And I ran 15:19, so I just snuck under the standard at a race in California less than a month before, about exactly a month before the trials. So I was kind of getting down to the wire. It's a little intimidating chasing times on the track because you have to be running so hard the whole time. It's less about competing and more about, you know, racing the clock. So those, I think, are a little higher pressure for me. But yeah, I finally hit the auto qualifier, so that was really exciting for me. And then I was able to compete at the trials.
So I love what you said there for, like, especially for 5Ks. I feel like you just have to go out with a gun. You're ready to go and, like, prime. So is there something you do to warm up when you are about to run a 5K? Do you have, like, a secret mobility routine or anything like that?
Well, we always do a good, like, you know, 20-minute jog warm up with some drills beforehand. I think the newest thing that we've been doing this year, we do a hard 200. For me personally, before races, I just feel so nervous. My body almost feels like jello. And so it kind of shakes that feeling out, you know, just doing a hard 200 kind of gets you in the zone, gets you ready to roll. The 200 is at maybe race pace or faster. And I do that about 20 minutes before the race starts. And usually once I get that out of the way, I start to feel a little bit more focused and calm and collected and ready to go. But yeah, those pre-race nerves can definitely get you. So I think if you can just do something like a hard stride or a hard 200 and kind of help shake that out. Usually you can feel a little bit better, kind of get rid of those nerves and be more focused and ready to go.
And speaking of warming up for the 5K, so we have had many people talk about distance, endurance and nutrition and what they eat before that. But tell us a little bit about what your pre-race food strategy looks like before a 5K.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I feel like I've kind of been my own guinea pig on how to recommend fueling for endurance athletes. It definitely depends on what time of day the race is. I think the trickiest thing, like my qualifying 5K to get into the trials was at 9 p.m., which is a really late race. So obviously you're having to eat meals all day long and then get ready for the race versus like the trials, my race is at 5 o'clock, which is also kind of challenging because it's right before dinner time. So I think for me, it's mostly just been really focusing on like low fiber foods the day before, getting plenty of hydration and electrolytes the day before. And then the day of the race, kind of same thing, just making sure that I'm eating enough carbohydrates. That's mainly my focus. I'll try to get, you know, enough protein in there as well. But I would say race day and the day before race day are not the time to worry too much about veggies and that kind of thing. You know, just really focus on foods that are easy to digest, that will give you energy, keep you hydrated. And then you have to consider nerves too. A lot of times athletes don't feel hungry The day of a race, the first day of my trials, I was so nervous. I think I was more nervous than I've ever been for a race. And I was really struggling to eat, but I just did what I could. You know, I ate when I felt like I could, focused on those carbs, and everything was fine. So not panicking one way or the other if your fueling doesn't go perfectly or, you know, it's not exactly what you were hoping for it to be. If you're doing a good job the day before and as best you can the day of, you'll be fine.
And how was it for you transitioning from Colorado to Eugene? I mean, it was really hot there, right? And did that change any of your hydration or fueling?
Yeah. So Colorado, we get pretty warm summers, but they're dry. So it's like, you know, before we left for Eugene, it was in the 80s to 90s. My first race in Eugene was like in the 80s and it felt warm, but no different than what I've been doing. My second race was 95, so that was a little toasty, but I did just focus more on hydration. So I used like a higher sodium electrolyte drink mix just to make sure that I was really hydrated. I know myself, I'm a heavy sweater. I, you know, sweat a lot of salt too, so I need more electrolytes than maybe somebody else. So for me, it's mostly just focusing on getting those electrolytes, getting plenty of fluids, but not overdoing it on the fluids. You know, I see a lot of people do that on race day as well. And just again, you know, when I get to the race, knowing that I've done everything I could to be ready and that everyone's running in the same conditions, it's hot for everybody. So, just not letting that mentally get to me, I think was a big one.
Oh, for sure. And we'll definitely dive into mental strength later. But so did you have more of like your electrolyte mix like in an hour before or the whole day before, like the whole week you were there, or however long you were in Eugene? Like, tell us more about that.
Yeah. So I was in Eugene for like over a week, which were like before my race, which is a long time. So obviously you have travel in there and travel can be dehydrating. So I was focusing on getting electrolytes during my flight and then afterwards as well. And then the day before my first race, you know, getting plenty of electrolytes. The day of, same thing. I usually will drink something like Scratch, which has carbs and electrolytes right before my race. So maybe that'll be, you know, 2 hours before my race, I'll finish a water bottle of Scratch. And then the day of my really hot race, I did, Noon has a new product called Noon Instant. It has 500 milligrams of sodium instead of the usual 350 in the little tablets. So, it's kind of like more of a hyper hydration product. But that's what I used the day before and the day of my really hot race. And then I also had Scratch right before as well. So I did a lot of electrolyte loading for the hot race, more so even than for the first one.
Yeah, I haven't heard of the Noon Instant. Have you, Sarah?
I haven't, not until now.
Yeah, because I know the Osmo, like the preload, but that's really, really difficult to find because I've used that for races and I can't recommend it enough for salty sweaters.
Yeah, yeah. So look into it. A lot of running stores carry it. I really liked it and it worked pretty well for me. So yeah.
Yeah, definitely. 12th girl. That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I have a side question here. So do you call yourself elite? Like, are you an elite runner?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's kind of complicated because I don't have a contract. So sometimes I feel odd calling myself a professional runner. I'm not getting a salary to run. But at the same time, you know, I did have Tracksmith supporting me heading into the trial. So I represented Tracksmith. I do try to do races for money. So definitely elite, sub-professional, I guess. I'm not really sure how you would phrase that, but somewhere in between like the elite and professional realm, I guess.
Well, and this might be too personal. You don't have to answer if you don't want to. Yeah. But I mean, you finished 12th, so you clearly finished ahead of women who probably have a sponsorship. So is that something that you are looking forward to in the future? Is that something that you're like aiming for? Or
definitely, yeah, that's something I would love to have. I think it's nice to have that support. You know, as somebody who's trying to manage working full-time and running, it's nice to kind of take some of that financial strain off of me, especially just like when it comes to traveling for races and having to take time off of work. And, you know, I love running and I'm more than happy to do it, but sometimes it feels a little stressful with finances. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a big goal of mine. I think it's kind of tricky because, you know, I'm 28 and I graduated college a long time ago, and there's a lot of younger people coming out of college who are more appealing to big companies to sign contracts because they know they'll be in the sport for the next, you know, 4 to 5 years. Whereas someone who's 28, it's more of a gamble. But, you know, that being said, I hope I could potentially represent what a company is looking for in an athlete, and I may be able to pick something up for the next couple of years, who knows? But yeah, it's definitely a goal of mine. And I'm hoping getting 12th at the trials was a step towards that.
Yeah, I was watching with my husband. I'm like, she's a dietitian. That's her. She's going to be on our podcast. I just think it's so cool that, you know, having a sports dietitian in there representing our profession, I almost feel like we're your tribe behind you, just rooting you on.
Yeah, I got so many shout outs from dietitians. It was amazing just to feel the support of the community of sports dietitians. So that was really awesome. And thank you if you were one of those people that reached out or said something. It really meant a lot.
Yeah, and we're going to get into your fueling strategy and kind of view on nutrition soon. But I also think it's great that you're promoting that, like, women need to eat more. Most runners do, kind of message that we take on this podcast too.
Let's take a short break and talk about Patreon. If you want to support the podcast, we started a Patreon account with different levels of support to choose from, with tons of freebies, discount codes, and more. The lower tier is just $3 a month, less than your daily latte order. Sarah and I pour so much into this podcast and want to continue to provide you guys with the best. Head to patreon.com/nailyournutrition or check out the show notes to support us. We so appreciate it. All right, let's get back to this episode.
So tell us what your training looks like leading up to a race. So you said that you qualified about a month before the trials. So was that your goal? What did you do to get there? And I know you mentioned you work with Team Boss. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Joe Bossard, which is why we call ourselves Team Boss, he's our coach, and we've been training for a really long time. Obviously, the Olympic trials were meant to happen in 2020, not 2021, but that kind of worked out in my favor because I actually was injured at the end of 2019, early 2020. So it gave me an extra year to kind of just slowly progress back into training. And, you know, we really just tried to be consistent with mileage. So I was running 70 miles a week consistently since about last year. We do some altitude training stints, I guess super altitude because we're already at 5,000 feet, but we go up to Crested Butte, which is at 8,000 feet, train up there for a month or so. We've gone to Phoenix in the winter to Colorado's snow is just kind of difficult to train in and can cause some injuries. So we've gone to like a warm weather training camp and really just trying to stay focused, but not just on the short term, you know, really being in it for the next year and a half and knowing my goals were in June, July, August of 2021, back in when I was injured in the pool in the fall of 2019. So it's definitely a long game. You know, you have to be pretty focused and just take it one day at a time, not think too far ahead and just try to be consistent. And that goes the same with fueling, with sleep, you know, just being consistent with that kind of thing is only going to help you have that longevity and that health in a sport where you're trying to compete for years on end. So I definitely learned a lot about that in the past couple of years. And I think just loving the sport more than ever is really what kept me going through COVID, through no races, and you know, that kind of uncertain time. And again, just getting to Hayward in June and just seeing the crowds and feeling that energy was just like, all of it was worth it. And it just was so amazing to be there. So it was a long year, but a lot of consistency, a lot of growth as an athlete. And it was awesome.
That's great. So tell us about your injury and how you've been staying injury free since then. I'm all too familiar with injury, so I always want to pick people's brains on this.
Yeah. So again, dietitians will understand this. I was during my dietetic internship. So I was working, you know, 40-hour weeks. I was also training full time. So I was running about 60-mile weeks at that time. And I would go from, you know, to the hospital from like 6 to 3, and then I would go straight to the track to train. And then I would get home at like 7 p.m. and make dinner, go to bed, and or do more like the workbooks, all that kind of stuff. So it was a crazy, crazy busy year for me. I definitely neglected a little bit of recovery side of things and sleep. And so I think I kind of overdid it a bit, ended up with an injury. And so that was kind of tough, you know, just the end of the hard year. Finally, it was time to race and I was, you know, struggling with an injury. So that was kind of challenging. I did have to take about 12 weeks of no running. So that was really hard. And I had to just be in the pool the whole time. You know, I wasn't back on the ground until I think it was February or March of 2020. So it was a pretty long haul. But again, you know, COVID for me worked out well. I've heard stories for other people where it was the opposite. They were healthy in 2020 and they weren't in 2021. So it was it's hard when your experience is so different from somebody else's. But again, just timing for me was all right. I was able to become healthy, train consistently, kind of with my own business. I was able to focus on setting my own hours and giving myself those boundaries to have time after a run to stretch and recover and give myself enough time to get 9 hours of sleep every night. So it was kind of, you know, it worked out really well, just learning that balance and learning where my breaking point was, and trying to stay away from that breaking point now and just finding that balance in my life as well. So, definitely learning experience, but glad to be healthy.
Oh, I know, it's so hard. And a lot of us think like, oh my gosh, I'm about to get injured. I just need to stretch more, or I need to, you know, do a couple lunges and squats and then I'll be okay. But it's really just a balance, like you said, of everything, like eating better and sleeping more and being less stressed, because your body recognizes stress as just one thing. It's not just like, oh, I'm stressed from my job. It's stress from not sleeping well, not recovering well and training too much. And so I think that's such a good point that you make, that in order to stay injury free, you have to look at the whole picture and not just one aspect. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us how you set your training goal. So did you have like that 15-20 time like written down somewhere and you were looking at it and you knew that's what you wanted to do? Or was that more of like a last minute decision? Like, oh, you know, your coach was like, you can do this, you know, the day of. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's definitely been our goal for the past year, or 2 years, I would say. As soon as we saw what the standard was, we were like 15-20. So that was just in my mind all the time. In practice, when we were running paces that felt really hard and it was 15-20 pace or even slower because we were up so high, I was just reminding myself, you know, this is what it's going to feel like in your race. I was not only practicing the physical side of training, but the mental side, just knowing, okay, it's really hard for the middle whatever laps, and then you can always finish strong, or, you know, you're going to feel comfortable in the beginning, or maybe you never feel comfortable. I think that's the big thing with the track 5K. I've realized and accepted that you will never feel good per se if you're out there chasing a time and you're trying to PR. It doesn't feel good, but if you're practicing that in practice and you know that's how it's going to feel, it's a lot easier to embrace that and just kind of be mentally tougher than the other runners out there if you're ready for that pain, but you know that you've trained for it. I think that was kind of what contributed to my big breakthrough, because it ended up being about a 20-second PR to get that time. So that's a pretty big drop. And I think most of it for me was just breaking through that mental barrier of saying, okay, you can do this. It's hard, but you can do hard things. Let's go. And I just, from the gun, you know, I was like, this is my race strategy. I'm going to hit 15-20 or bust. And we did it. So it was an exciting moment.
Yeah. And I think the mental prep is so underrated, what people don't think about when they're trying for goals. And did you do any visualization or anything like that? Or did you write 15-20 so you would see it more, to kind of like prep that way?
Yeah. So Joe was having us do, at the end of our like strength training sessions last year, we were doing like 5 minutes of just like lights out. We would just visualize our races for a little bit, just kind of practice in our head, you know, how do you want to feel? Where do you want to position yourself? Where are you on the track? What are you noticing? Are you going to panic when your breathing increases or your heart rate increases, or are you just going to settle into it and just be ready? So I did a lot of that visualization, just practicing for that, again, that pain, that feeling of, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can do this, and just pushing through it. And yeah, I would say right before the race, I always take a moment to like close my eyes, maybe listen to a low key song and just kind of try to calm myself down and just remind myself of all the training that I've put in, all the hard work that I've been doing. You know, I deserve this just as much as anybody else on the start line. Why can't I be the one to achieve my goals today? And so just kind of put myself into that headspace before a race has made a big difference, just with that confidence level when I step on the start line.
I love that.
How long have you been with Team Boss? Because they sound awesome.
Yeah, I've been with Team Boss since 2018. So about 3 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're the best. I'm so thankful for that group.
What's the environment like within, like with the group of athletes there?
I think the environment's probably my favorite part about Team Boss. I think people look at our group and they see, you know, Emma Coburn, who's a world champion, and now Corey McGee, who's an Olympian, and Aisha, Dom, you know, everyone who has these amazing track records. And they assume that we're just a super intense group that all we ever do is focus on running. But I think the part about our group that makes us so unique and I think allows everyone to be so good is that there's an incredible life balance outside of training. They know how to have fun and they know how to have fun training. And so it doesn't feel like this intense environment day after day. You know, we show up at the track, it's a hard session, but we do this, you know, working together and having fun. And then afterwards, maybe we'll go get margaritas, or, you know, we're able to have that balance. And again, as a dietitian, I can't tell you how much I appreciate everyone on my team's outlook on food. I mean, everyone just knows the importance of fuel and it's never been a question. And I think that speaks volumes to why these women have been in the sport and have been relevant in the sport for so long, because they understand that balance and the fact that you have to treat your one body with respect as well as have fun and work hard. And it's not just one of those things that's going to get you to the top. So I think our environment is very unique for a group that's at this level. And it's something that I find very inspiring and that I hope younger female athletes can learn from.
I love that. And I was talking to Sarah before you hopped on, and I saw like a lot of chatter about Team Boss being like very, and I put it in quotes, chiseled, right? And very fit. So do you feel any pressure to fit into that stereotype being on that team?
I don't. I mean, again, everyone's body type is so different, and there's some athletes who can look at a weight and put on muscle and some athletes that lift their whole life and will never have a six pack. And I think you can find that pretty much all across the board on our team. I think, again, social media can be hard because pictures can be deceiving or they can highlight one thing versus another. But I would say in general, it's never something that is like talked about on our team. Like, oh, this person doesn't have a six pack. This person does. Like, we don't talk about each other's bodies. We talk about each other's strengths on the track, mentally, physically. Not appearance. And I think that's something that's really important to separate for young female runners. You know, looks are one thing, but that actually translating into usable strength is totally different. So I think we all see how hard everybody works and know that whatever we look like is the result of a lot of hard work. And so it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. What matters is if you're doing everything you can to be a better athlete.
I love that. So well spoken and a great answer. I mean, it sounds like the environment within Team Boss is like top notch.
It's pretty awesome. I feel very lucky.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about your nutrition strategy? So we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but what does a typical day of eating and fueling look like for Maddie when you're deep in a training cycle? So obviously you have that dietitian hat. So what does that look like? Share with us.
Yeah, so I eat anything and everything. I don't have anything that I avoid or don't eat. You know, even during the peak of my season, two nights before my Olympic trials 5K, I had ice cream. You know, it's not, I know as a dietitian that what I'm eating, you know, as long as I'm getting balanced, getting the nutrients that I need, is not going to be the be all end all of my race or my performance. It's more of that, again, that consistency. If you're under fueling, that's when you'll see the main impact on your performance. If you're adequately fueling and you're getting that balance and you're not putting huge mental pressure on yourself to avoid foods that you love. And, you know, I think that can be mentally taxing as well. So I just try to approach food as part of my job of running and just something that I can enjoy and that I know will fuel me for the long term in my sport. So I would say I eat more than all of my friends who don't run. You know, they're always shocked. They're like, how do you eat this much? Which is something I always tell my younger athletes too. It's okay if you're eating more than your friends who don't run, right? You should be. So that's never something that I've worried about because I know that's what I need and that's what's right for my body. So, you know, I eat breakfast, lunch, dinner, multiple snacks throughout the day, pre and post run. You know, I make sure that I'm being consistent with my fuel, not going more than 3 to 4 hours without eating something, consistently hydrating, you know, all the things that sports dietitians preach, but not all athletes take to heart. But yeah, again, it's just that consistency, that balance, carbs, color, protein at all my meals, that kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, again, there's no specific food that I eat or a specific food that I don't eat. I just try to listen to my body, eat what sounds good, and focus on that consistency.
That sounds like exactly what we talk about on here all the time. Love that. What's your fuel of choice when you're going for a longer run or something over an hour that requires some fuel?
Yeah. So I actually eat before all my runs, even if they're under an hour. I just feel better when I do that and I feel like I recover better. So, you know, typically my pre-run doesn't change a whole lot day to day. I eat something like I do a lot of toaster waffles with syrup, or I do toast with peanut butter and honey and banana slices. Sometimes I do like those little Kodiak cake pancake in a cup things. I really like those. Those are good for like longer runs or workouts for me. And then I always do some type of electrolyte. So usually it's noon or it's scratch. And then I also drink some espresso before my runs.
Tell me like what your gel, or like if you take some kind of like liquid-based nutrition, tell me about that.
Yeah, so I actually don't use gels. I don't really, my longest run is 13 miles and that takes me about an hour 30 tops. So usually what I do is I just bring scratch, which has carbs in it. My coach usually drives with our water bottles. So I make sure to have, you know, some type of carb in my electrolyte drink during those longer runs. And then also when I'm on the track, you know, if we have a track session, I'll bring scratch and kind of sip on that throughout my workout. But yeah, I don't usually run long enough to use gels. My teammates who are marathoners obviously use those in their long runs and training a lot more. But you know, sometimes I'll do like Honey Stinger waffles before a run, or if it's like a double run, sometimes I'll do one of those before a double. But yeah, I don't use gels a lot in my training just because, again, my runs aren't quite long enough.
Right, right. So I was going to ask that. How does your nutrition change when you have a double day, if at all?
Yeah, I think doubles are, I mean, for me personally, they're really challenging. So I understand athletes who struggle to fuel on double days, especially when you're working, because, you know, if you schedule people too close together and you don't give yourself enough of a break, all of a sudden, you know, it's like 4 o'clock, you have to double at 5. Do you eat a big meal? Do you eat a snack? So it's definitely been some trial and error for me this past year. I actually hadn't doubled until I started hitting 70 miles a week sometime about a year and a half ago. So it is newer for me. I definitely have a new appreciation for athletes who struggle with fueling during doubles. I get it. I think for me, the biggest key has just been not waiting until after your double. Like if you're worried about eating lunch too close to your double, I just split it up. So I'm eating like half a lunch before, half after. So you're not missing that meal. It just looks a little bit different. I think, again, one of the biggest things I've learned for fueling is there's no right or wrong time of day to eat. I hear a lot of athletes say, oh, I missed lunch, or, you know, it's really late for breakfast. But lunch is whenever you eat lunch. You know, it doesn't have to be at noon and then afternoon it's not lunch anymore. That's not really how it works, you know? So I think just finding that flexibility sometime during the day, whatever your schedule looks like, making it work. So for me, because I usually double on workout days, you know, I'll have pre-run around 7:30, then my workout will be from around 9 to like 12:30 with lift and stuff. I'll have a like protein carb recovery drink in between my run and my lift. Then I'll immediately do my breakfast, which ends up being around like 1 o'clock, you know, on workout days. And then I try to make sure I schedule time for myself to eat something around like 3 or 4. Then I'll do my double. Then I'll come back and have a snack, then dinner. So it just looks a little different. Sometimes I have to move things around. Yeah. But I've found that if I can just consistently fuel, I actually feel a lot better on my doubles, and my stomach feels better the more that I eat, ironically, on doubles than on the days that I'm, you know, like, oh, I don't want my stomach to be upset. Those usually end up being my worst doubles. So something to consider for anyone struggling with doubles.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's hard and it's tricky. And you're so right that you get into this mindset of like, oh, it's 12 o'clock. I haven't eaten anything yet. I'm just going to plow forward and not have anything. Or it's past breakfast. And you really got to let go of that mindset that we've been talked about for drained into us for so long. So that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as a fellow sports dietitian, tell us what your philosophy is on nutrition.
So I guess my philosophy kind of touched on it earlier, but it's really just listening to your body and eating what you feel is best for you. Everyone's going to be completely different. And if you try to eat how your teammate eats, may or may not work for you. And it can be hard for people when they see their teammate doing one thing, they try to do it and they get totally different results and they feel frustrated. But I think you just, I always say eyes on your own plate. You really can't compare your own fueling approach to anybody else's, again, because only you know what you need. So I think really just, again, listening to your body, eating when you're hungry, especially I see a lot of runners like on easy days struggling. They feel hungrier on easy days than hard days, but they're like, oh, I didn't run as much today, so I shouldn't eat as much. But oftentimes we end up eating less on hard days, like I just said, with the crazy schedule or your appetite is suppressed or whatever it may be. And you need more on that easy day to make up for it. So you know, not putting too much stock into what your day looks like. And again, just understanding and trusting that your body knows what it needs. And then again, just not restricting anything. Running and training hard day in and day out is already mentally exhausting. If you add restricting food or avoiding foods that you love on top of that, for me, that kind of takes the fun out of it. And it takes away that enjoyment outside of training, which I think is so important. So, you know, I never say no to ice cream. I eat ice cream a lot, especially in the summer, and, you know, desserts and things like that. I think as long as you're getting what you need during the day and you're, and in general, you're getting that balance, you're getting those nutrients, you know, anything else is not going to make or break you as an athlete. I think that's where people tend to put too much stock into what they're eating. Like, you know, eating the wrong thing is going to make them a bad athlete. It's like, no, not eating enough is going to impact your performance more so than having ice cream every week, you know? So just learning that balance, what it looks like for you, and allowing yourself to enjoy those foods that you like.
Would you say that's the biggest struggle with the athletes you work with?
I think the biggest struggle for a lot of athletes I work with is finding that balance. You know, I think they say things like, oh, I just had these crazy cravings and I couldn't stop eating. I ate a whole pint of ice cream. And what I try to emphasize to them is it's not the pint of ice cream that's the problem. It's why you were having those severe cravings for that pint of ice cream and why you couldn't stop yourself that are really what we're trying to figure out. And usually, again, it all comes down to underfueling, and especially underfueling with carbs. You're way more likely to crave those kinds of foods that you'd consider less performance friendly if you're not eating enough. And so what athletes typically find is if they improve that balance and they eat more, they actually don't want that pint of ice cream at the end of the day, or they're able to just have one scoop and they're fine with it, or they just don't even want sugar very often. And that's okay too. You know, I think it's more for me, I think athletes struggle with figuring out, making that connection between the why they're making that choice or having that craving and understanding that it's not the food itself. You know, there's more to it than that. So I would say that's probably the biggest challenge I encounter.
Yeah, I would 100% agree for sure. And you've also worked with Olympic athletes and at the Olympic Training Center in California. And then you've also worked with D1 athletes and high elite level athletes. So can you tell us what that's like? Are their needs so different than us regular everyday athletes? Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So I love working with, you know, like collegiate through professional athletes because they're really willing to do whatever it takes to be the best version of themselves as an athlete. And I love meeting with athletes who don't have a lot of experience with nutrition because I love seeing when they make those changes, I love seeing how drastically different they feel, how much better they feel, how much their performance improves or their recovery improves. And so it's just really fun for me just to see athletes learn more about their bodies and learn more about what it's like to properly fuel and what that can actually look like versus what they're hearing on, or, you know, seeing on social media or hearing from teammates or coaches. And I think there's a very toxic environment in sports, especially in running, around properly fueling yourself. And so helping athletes break that stigma, I think, is probably my favorite part of working with them. And high-level athletes, again, I like this population because they actually will do what you tell them to do. You know, they want to see those improvements. And so if you tell them to eat more, they're like, all right, I'm going to do it. And they do. And then we can actually see and talk about those improvements, which is really fun for me. But in terms of being like super different from your everyday person, I think the biggest difference is obviously their goals, right? For Olympians, their goal is to medal or make it to the Olympics versus somebody who is just running for fun. Their goal might be just to be able to run as consistently as they can and have energy to get home and play with their kids or whatever that looks like. So the goals are different, but overall, I would say in general, the approach to nutrition itself doesn't really differ. It's still about finding that balance and fueling your body. And usually the answer is eating more for most people, even just weekend warriors or, you know, people training for their first 5K. That toxic food culture expands well beyond just elite level athletes. So again, it's mostly just helping people find what balance looks like for them and their schedule, their goals, their training. But, you know, there's obviously going to be difference in terms of how much they need and what they need compared to Olympic level athletes. But, you know, again, I hear people saying, oh, I'm not a real athlete, though. It's like, well, you're still out there running, you know, 30, 40, 50 miles a week, and you're still training hard for a goal. And so you are an athlete and you deserve to fuel like one. So there's differences, but they're not as big as you would think.
I love that. I think everybody has it within them to be an athlete if they really set their mind to it and want to do it. Everybody's an athlete. And I love that you still have to fuel and treat your body like you are an athlete. Even if you don't have humongous goals, you're still working hard out there on the road and on the track, and you got to treat your body right. I love that.
Absolutely.
So what's next for you running wise and career wise? Are you going to keep working with athletes? Are you looking at the next Olympics or something a little longer or shorter? What's on the radar for you?
Yeah, I think this Olympic trials was really encouraging for me. It kind of made me feel like, okay, I can keep doing this. I can keep going. I'm not done yet. I feel like I'm kind of just breaking through those mental and physical barriers to be, you know, continuing to improve, to be one of the best that I can be at this distance. And, you know, I think next year, Worlds is already coming up in Eugene next year. And I mean, as long as I'm enjoying it, I'm having fun, I would say there's no reason why I would stop. I don't want to stop until I feel like I've reached my full potential and given myself that full opportunity. That being said, I my business, again, has been amazing because it's allowed me to have that flexibility to train and also focus on recovery while still doing what I love and having income and, you know, getting to work with high level athletes. So that's kind of my foreseeable future. You know, maybe it's not permanent, of course, but I would definitely like to keep running for the next year and beyond and keep my business going and keep helping other athletes, you know, learn what it's like to fuel properly and learn how they can fuel their best. So that's kind of where I'm headed, I think, for the foreseeable future.
Oh, I love that. I'm sure you're going to keep crushing it too. I mean, it can only go up. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Maddie, before we wrap up, let's do a quick rapid fire. So awesome. Just say the first thing that comes to your head. Don't think too hard. And let's dive in.
All right.
Okay, I think I know the answer to this one, but what's your favorite race distance?
Ooh, I actually love the 1500. In terms of what I'm best at would be the 5K.
Oh, that's too funny. Okay, so 1500 for those who are math challenged like me, how many laps is that?
It's 3 3/4. So it's like a metric, okay. It's the metric mile. It's basically just as short of a mile.
Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. That's funny. So what's your PR in that?
I run 4:13, which is, it's not super impressive, but you know, it's fun out there. So
That is mind-boggling to me. Wow. So what's your favorite race you've ever run?
I think my favorite race, it would either be the one in LA where I qualified for the trials, or in college when I raced in Kansas and qualified for NCAAs. Both those races, my qualifying races, have been my favorite races of my career.
Oh, I love that. What's a race on your bucket list?
I would love to do the Fifth Ave mile. That's in New York at the end of, or like in September. And it's always like the big fun ending race for everybody. I would love to try to get into that at some point in my career. That would be on my bucket list.
That seems like an amazing race and full of so much fun energy. I would love to do that too. What's your favorite brand of running shoes or running shorts?
I love New Balance running shoes. That's what I run in now. And running shorts, I would say I go back and forth between New Balance and Nike, like spandex fit and split shorts as well.
And then what's your favorite easy weeknight meal?
Ooh, I love stir fries or any type of Asian dish. Those are so easy for me to get everything all in one meal, and you don't have to worry about adding sides or anything. And I love the flavors. So probably those.
Oh, I love it. Maddie, where can people connect and hopefully work with you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram. My personal / running account is MadZalm12, and my professional dietitian account is Fueling Forward. And I have a website, fuelingforward.com, and that's where you can inquire about working together and that kind of thing. So you can find me on all those places.
Yay. Thank you so much for this super awesome talk. I mean, we were so pumped to get you on beforehand. And then when we heard about the Olympic trials, we were like, oh my gosh, can't wait to pick her brain. So thank you for taking the time to come on and chat with us.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. This was so fun.
That wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review so others can find it more easily. You can also stay in touch by joining our Facebook group, Nutrition for Runners. If you have any requests for future episode topics and more, email us at nailyournutritioncourse1@gmail.com. Happy fueling!